Julia Tipton. Dr. Tipton earned her Doctor of Nursing Science from LSU, and she teaches at the LSU Health Science Center School of Nursing here in New Orleans. She teaches child health nursing and research in nursing at LSU. Her research interests include sugar-sweetened beverage consumption and obesity prevention among youth. She's worked in the child health setting since 1987. She's a member of the Southern Nursing Research Society and the Society of Pediatric Nurses. She's also involved in local community organizations that promote quality of life and safety in New Orleans. Dr. Tippett.
Thank you for having me. So I'm interested in childhood obesity, and I found myself looking at sugar-sweetened beverages, and I was interested in what is motivating caregivers to serve young children sugar-sweetened beverages. I have no relationships to disclose. We're required to say that to present at this conference. And when I'm talking about sugar-sweetened beverages, I'm talking about any type of beverage to which a caloric sweetener has been added. And there's that list up there, and I know I'm short on time, so I'm not going to read everything that's on every slide. I'm just going to go over some of them, and this was actually a pretty big study where I did three separate studies. So since I don't have time to go over all that, I put in additional slides on the handout that's on the website that you all can look at. And this list is not even comprehensive. Vitamin water, for example, has sugar in it. Pretty much anything that you can add sugar to has sugar in it. Why do I care about this? Well, the main reason that got me into looking at it is childhood obesity. We know that sugar-sweetened beverages are also a contributing factor to many other health disparities. And the population that I'm looking at, some of these comorbidities are even higher in the African-American population, such as weight gain, type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, dental caries, and heart disease. What we do know is that kids are drinking a lot of sugary drinks, 60% of girls, 70% of boys, on a daily basis, and depending on what study you look at, almost up to 70% of 2 to 5-year-olds have some sort of sugary drink on a daily basis. We know that intake increases with age. That's why I'm targeting the 2 to 5-year-olds. And we're drinking a lot more calories from sugary drinks than we used to. Half of the intake's actually at home. So we're doing all these school-based interventions, but we also need to look at what's going on at home. And there's higher consumption among non-Hispanic blacks compared to whites, particularly the non-juice fruit drinks like Sunny D, Kool-Aid, and so on, and then low-income families tend to have a higher intake. So this is really a mouthful. Basically what this is saying is I'm looking at psychosocial factors that drive intention to serve sugary drinks, and I'll explain what that means in a minute, and I'm using the expanded theory of planned behavior as the guiding framework. So I know that a lot of people hate theory. I just have to explain it a little bit so that these words make sense. What the theorist says is that the intention to serve something or the intention to do, engage in a behavior, depends on your attitude towards that behavior, and that's shaped by your beliefs about what the outcomes of engaging that behavior would be and whether or not you think that would be good or bad. Like maybe if you drink a lot of sugary drinks, it could cause diabetes, and you think diabetes is good or bad. Subjective norm is basically a person's belief of what important people in their lives think they should do. And that is made up of who are those important people and how important it is for you to do what they think you should do. And then perceived behavior control, this is just basically talking about control factors. What are those things that can make it easier or more difficult to do something, and how much control do you think you have over this? So this could be something like accessibility or cost. And so this is the research question. I'll let you read it because it's really a mouthful. But I'm basically looking for the relationships from this model. And I added in past behavior. I didn't go over that. And that's how I expanded the model, because I thought, you know, what you're doing, what your habits are, what you're doing in the past plays a role also. So I did a cross-sectional correlational study with multiple regression and path coefficients to look at not just the relationships, but the strengths of the relationships, so we could see what were more predictive of intention. And it was a three-phase project where I did elicitation interviews. I did a qualitative piece where I went to some WIC clinics and interviewed caregivers about what their beliefs were. And then I went through some very tedious pilot testing of the instrument for content validity face validity, and then reliability, and then I did my model and hypothesis testing. So I made my own instrument. After many revisions, I ended up with 58 items, with 49 items that measured the things in the model and then some demographic items. And I have my statistics up here also for the different subscales, and that's online if you want to look at that. But like I said, I know I'm short on time. So when I actually, when I was done revising the instrument and I was actually doing the main study, I had a sample of 165 caregivers, predominantly low-income, non-Hispanic preschoolers between the ages of 2 to 5. And I was looking, what the questionnaire was asking them was about their intention to serve sugary drinks on a daily basis over the next week and what their attitudes and beliefs were about that. So I went to 11 sites in the metropolitan New Orleans area, and they were primarily Head Start centers, there were some private preschool centers, but they served predominantly low-income, non-Hispanic, black families, and they were all federally funded. And the caregivers self-administered the questionnaire. And the mean age was about 31, mostly female, mostly non-Hispanic, black. Almost everybody, less than 8%, didn't at least have a high school education. And after that, they were a pretty well-educated group of caregivers. At least 35% had some college. Almost 19% had at least an associate or a bachelor's, and some even had a master's or a doctorate. But the vast majority, almost all of them, did reside in a low-income household. And the mean age of the children was a little bit over 3. 35% reported serving their child a sugary drink on a daily basis over the past week, and about 57% served at least once over the past week. So I did a zero-order correlation matrix with multiple regression and path coefficients. And when I got my results, this is what I saw. Surprisingly, the control factors tested out. They weren't significant, and that really surprised me. Past behavior was the strongest predictor. Overall, the model explained over 58% of intention to serve sugary drinks. Subjective norm and attitude were also significant predictors. Well, what does that really mean? What do you do about that? So I looked at the individual items, and every item for attitude was significantly correlated, but only 4 of those significantly predicted attitude and, you know, then indirectly intention. And those were child likes what he or she, child likes the taste, basically. No surprise there. They're convenient, it keeps the child content, and no major disadvantages. And for subjective norm, 2 groups significantly predicted subjective norm and intention, and those were parents of other young children and doctors. So, the conclusions, 35% of caregivers reported serving sugary drinks on a daily basis. That was actually a little bit surprising because, as you saw earlier, between 61 and 70% of 2 to 5-year-olds were consuming. So I don't really know exactly why my numbers were lower. I have a few theories about that. One could be that I was only getting information from caregivers of what they served. That's not taking account what maybe preschool staff is serving, or neighbors, or grandparents. It could also be social desirability. Or it could be that maybe some of the public awareness campaigns and the things that we're seeing in the news are actually having an effect and people aren't serving as much. One other thing is that I found that the definition of sugary drinks sometimes confused people. And even though I gave a definition and I had visual handouts, color visual handouts with things like Sunny D and Gatorade, a lot of people really just think of it as a Pepsi or a Coke. Significant predictors of attitude. So no major disadvantage was the most significant predictor of attitude. And I put in here knowledge or other factors because, you know, the first thing that comes to mind when you see that is it's a knowledge deficit. That's our term in nursing. And that may be true, but a very small minority of caregivers actually believed that there's no major disadvantage. It's just that no major disadvantage was very predictive of intention to serve. So this is where my qualitative piece was very valuable. I went back to my interviews, and what I was finding was that when I would ask the caregivers, you know, what do you think are some of the bad things about serving sugary drinks, I got some answers like, well, you know, look at where I live. I walk outside. We have oil refineries. We have chemical plants. I'm not drinking the water. I don't want my kid breathing the air here. And you're worried about a little knick-knack problem, like a sugary drink? Or look at the news. We've had a couple of murders in the last week within a one-block radius from me. I'm worried about my kid getting shot. And you're worried about whether or not I'm giving my kid a candy bar or a Pepsi? And so it's all a matter of perspective and, again, contextual factors. Taste, of course, you know, it's sweet. Everybody likes something that's sweet. Convenience, they talked about like the Capri Suns or in that nice little package. You can just grab it and go. And then keeping the child content. And that's another one where you really have to look at the context. It's not like these are a bunch of parents who just don't want to deal with their kid and they're just handing them a sugar drink. Yeah, maybe there's some who are like that. But again, when I went back to the interview, you're looking at this is a population who are probably, a lot of them are working minimum wage jobs. They're working their butts off. They put in a long day of work. Their kid's been in preschool all day. They're tired. You come home. Everybody's tired. Mom's trying to make dinner. The kid's crying. She's trying everything she can to calm him. Finally, she gives in, you know, and I've been there myself as a parent. Sometimes, you know, you try to do the right thing, but sometimes you're just like, okay, fine, just take it. You know, I'll do whatever you want. The significant predictors of subjective norm were doctors, which was good to know because that indicates that if, as healthcare professionals, we're doing counseling, people are actually listening. We may not think they are, but they are. But then another one was other parents of young children. That, I don't know if that's surprising or not. That was interesting. So what does this all mean for what we do? Well, for nursing practice and as other healthcare professionals, it's important to assess what kids are drinking, what parents know, and to talk to them about sugary drinks and make sure they understand that non-juice fruit drinks aren't healthy, and, you know, to definitely provide counseling. For patient education, there's a lot that we can do. For taste, like what do we do about taste? That's a tough one. But we can give them some suggestions like putting slices of fruit in water. One thing that I learned when I moved to New Orleans is people here don't drink tap water. It's like going to Paris. If you give somebody a glass of tap water, you'll just get this like, ugh. I moved here and people get spring water delivered to their homes. They have water coolers. And there's a big mistrust of the water in the river and the water because of the oil refineries. More than anywhere else I've ever lived. And I've lived a lot of places because my husband's military. Well, so a lot of these parents don't want to serve tap water to their kids, but they say that the water bottles are so much more expensive than Capri Sun. So maybe we can, you know, lobby water companies or beverage companies, but if we can get them to drink tap water, because apparently it is safe here, that's what we're told, at least, you know. How many of you from here? You don't drink tap water there either? Is it the Mississippi River then? I don't know. It's just interesting. But, you know, there are some things that we can do. Another big one with taste is to teach parents when kids are like babies still to hold off on introducing fruit juice and anything that's sweet, because once they develop that sweet tooth, it's really hard to start taking anything that's sweet tasting away. For nursing education, you know, it's important to make sure that we're teaching our students about nutrition and the links to health and the importance of patient education with our nursing students. Policy, there's a lot of things we can do, advocating for no sugary drinks being served at preschools. I did find out in the course of doing this research that the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, food stamps, about $2.1 billion is spent on sugary drinks a year. That blew my mind. It should be used for water, and it won't cover bottled water, is what I heard from one of my nursing students. So I don't know if that's true or not. So, you know, why not cover bottled water and get rid of the Pepsi and cover, you know, so we can promote more healthy things. And then for research, what? Oh, okay. Right, and that's not the same as... So that's with WIC too. That's not the same as food stamps, though, right? Right, yeah. Yeah, and WIC does a great job because when I went to the WIC clinics, those moms knew their stuff. They're like, oh, we watched the video, and they were just telling me all these bad things about sugary drinks. So, you know, they're paying attention. We just need to get out there and, you know, figure out where we need to do the work. For research, you know, I'd like to do an intervention. I'd like to look a little bit more at the attitude that there's no major disadvantages, maybe find out what's going on with perceptions with the water. I'm a nurse. I'm not a public health person. I'm actually, my background's pediatric nursing, but, you know, it's kind of maybe a little bit more interested in all these environmental factors. So there's a lot of research that can still be done. And then, of course, you know, this is a very narrow population that I looked at, so it'd be good to look at this with other populations. So in closing, past behavior, attitude, and subjective norm were predictors of caregivers' decisions to serve sugary drinks to preschoolers, but the control, that wasn't supported. Again, I think more research should probably be done on that because, you know, it just seems to me that there were a lot of control factors that would come into play, but maybe there has a lot more to do with beliefs. I'm not really sure. Findings can be integrated into strategies aimed at decreasing sugary drink consumption among young children. And I think the finding with the no major disadvantages really highlights the need for individual counseling. Like I said, the majority of the caregivers knew that sugary drinks could cause diabetes and, you know, heart problems and dental caries. But I think it's important to really talk to people and figure out what's really going on. You can only do that if you're tailoring strategies individually and to avoid a one-size-fits-all approach.